Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hello and welcome to Future Projection. This is episode 150 of the show. I'm Carlos Clazo, joined as always by Ben Badler for a special new mailbag episode. We mentioned this on our last podcast, but we wanted to try and take some time to actually get into your questions outside of our divisional breakdowns. So Ben, we got some listener questions to dive straight into.
Yeah, let's get to it.
All right. No preamble needed here. I mean, our first one is a lot of fun, especially after just finishing up the draft lottery, number one picks on the mind. But Boxman on Twitter asks, where would Rock Chalowski rank in your current top 100 before his junior season? I'm not sure if the before his junior season specification
right now.
There. Yeah, right now, where would he rank?
If he was eligible, I mean, right now, or would you rank him?
I don't think it changes where I would rank him too much. Like, I'm not really needing Rock to go out and, I mean, I want him to go out and perform. I just don't think he's not going to perform. So I guess it doesn't really change too much of like the specifics of where I would have him rank. But like for me, gut feel, at least inside the top 10. And I don't feel like that's that crazy of a take for a player of his caliber. Where are you generally ballparking him? And then maybe we can get into like kind of the specifics and lining him up versus some other shortstops, or just maybe the track record or history of throwing top draftees that high on a top 100. But for me, he's definitely in the top 10, not outside of it.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at, is other shortstops who I would compare him to who are going to be at the top of our list. When I look at it overall, I'm definitely top 25. I would say top 15. And yeah, he does have a chance for top 10, I would say.
So we think through like some of the other shortstops who are at the top of our list right now. We can maybe add in where some of these other players will be. But right now we've got Connor Griffin, Kevin McGonigal, Jesus Madde, JJ Weatherholt. They feel pretty safe to stay inside that top five sort of range, top 10 definitely for us this offseason. Beyond that, it's Leo DeVries with the A's. Marcelo Meyer, who's not going to be eligible.
Graduated.
Yeah, Sebastian Walcott, we currently have on at 10 on our list. Then we have Colt Emerson at 12. So at least as our current list is constituted, those are our kind of top candidates. Any names that you can think of off the top of your head who will join that group? Maybe like Aiden Miller is a name to mention in that group.
One.
But like, I'm curious, for me, like the three I would take, maybe even the four I would have would be Griffin, McGonigal, Madde, Weatherholt. I think if you wanted to say Rock shouldn't be above any of those, that would make sense to me. But after that, I don't know that there's a shortstop I would take over Rock.
He's definitely going behind Connor Griffin. He's definitely going behind Kevin McGonigal. I think
those
you could make
in some capacity. Those should be our 1-2. I would imagine. I'd be shocked if it wasn't.
I think you can, if you love Rock Chalowski, I think you could make a case for him to then be the next shortstop up on our list.
Yeah.
I think it's better probability of shortstop and better defense at shortstop compared
Agreed.
To JJ Weatherholt and compared to Jesus Madde. Probably better defense too than Colt Emerson. Although I think Colt Emerson's got a lot better defensively.
I think he has better defense than everyone on this list, except for maybe Connor Griffin And even then, I would, if I had to pick one for just pure shortstop defense, I would still take Rock over Connor Griffin. I just think he's an elite defender.
I still would put him behind J.J. Weatherholt for now, just with what we've seen from Weatherholt do at
just
the
so much confidence in his pure hitting ability, like the proximate. Like, there is, I think the biggest critique you could probably have on Rock is that he's not an elite contact guy. Like, there is a little bit of swing and miss. And so if you think that maybe that gets exposed more against pro pitching, that would be the one area where I think, like, critiques make sense. But otherwise, I think Rock has probably better tools across the board than Weatherholt outside of speed. I think Weatherholt is fast. I think Rock can run pretty well underway, but I don't view Rock as like some plus runner.
Yeah, I probably would have him behind Jesus Madé with the Brewers.
Yeah, he's the one where I wasn't sure if I definitely would. Like,
I mean, well, they might still be at the same level when they get in the Pro Bowl, just because Made's moved so fast. But like, I don't think they're far away in terms of, I don't know. That's a close one for me. And I love Jesus Madé. Like, he's definitely a top 10 prospect, but it does make me think. I think there is more better defense with Rock Chulowski. As much as I like Rock Chulowski offensively, man, Madé doing what he's doing right now at his age, being 18 years old, is pretty special. It's pretty hard to come by. So I probably lean toward Madé, but that's the first one where I'm like, well,
right.
It gets more debatable. But I would take him. I think it's close between him and Colt Emerson. It's interesting to think about the two of them just being 2023 high school shortstops. I do like him more than Leo DeVries.
Right.
With the A's, though, I would take him ahead of him. Like, definitely to me, ahead of like George Lombard Jr., ahead of Eli Willits, who was the first overall pick.
But ahead of Walcott?
Yes. Yeah. I would have him ahead of Walcott. I've been a little bit low. I like Walcott, but just a little bit lower than most on him. Definitely ahead of like Bryce Rainer.
I feel like you would probably struggle to name 10 prospects that you would definitely take over Rock right now, even if you're going out beyond just shortstops. Like, I'm curious if you can get to 10 as we're talking through it, because I really don't know if I can. Like, the definites and like lean on the so I'll just say definite players that I would take over Rock right now: Connor Griffin, Kevin McGonigal, probably J.J. Weatherholt. I mean, probably Jesus Madé, but I'm already out of the definite category there. I might take Samuel Basayo, but I think if, like, I actually had to make a pick, I probably would rather have Rock. I would rather have Rock than both Max Clark and Walker Jenkins. I mean, for me, he's the definite top 10. That's why, like, there's... And then, like, there's no other player that's coming up on our current top 100 or just the guys that I expect to move up higher. Like, I just think he belongs there.
Yeah, what those guys have done in Pro Bowl, as much as I like Rock Chulowski, it still is college baseball, UCLA, like, good. I love them. It's just, all right, now we're debating, like, top 10 versus top 15. Either way, I mean, he's going to be top 15 for me. Sounds like top 10 for you. And maybe he is top 10 for me. So he'll be, there's a reason he's such a strong consensus for being a Chicago White Sox.
I guess, is there something he could add to his game to where he would jump into that definite top 10? It feels like a lot of it is just the fact that, like, college baseball is such a different beast than pro ball, and like the either proximity or the confidence in the competition and what some of these other guys have proven. Maybe there's, if he literally went out and did the same thing next year, it wouldn't really change how you view that difference in just track record. But I guess, is there like a one part of his game that you're either most skeptical of right now or want to see improvement in?
I think it's just these other players are really, really good. And we're talking about them doing it with wood bats in pro ball. A lot of these guys in with double A or higher experience, with the exception of Jesus Madé. So, you know, nothing Rock can do about that, but for trying to project these players out, it just does give you more confidence seeing these guys who are already producing, especially at the upper levels.
Yeah. Okay, let's go into our next question here. We got one from Nate Handy on Twitter. Who are some of your favorite technicians at the plate in the 2026 class, both college and high school? I kind of like this word too, technicians at the plate. We're assuming we're going for the hitterish guys, the pure hit tools of the class. I mean, Rock's kind of in that by default, but I don't think like that's what makes him the number one player in the class, like his this elite pure hitting ability. I think it's the totality of his tools. And so for me, when I think about like hit tool artists, hitterish players, I'm not going far down the list, but I'm going to Grady Emerson on the high school side. And then on the college side, I'm going to Derek Curiel at LSU. Those would be my top candidates in both demographics. How about you, Ben?
Yeah, on the high school side, Grady Emerson has to be the first name that jumps out. That's why he's the top high school player in the class. You just ever since I first saw him when he's like 15 years old, it jumps out right away how good of a hitter he is, how good of a swing he has. It's pretty much what you would draw up in a textbook trying to teach a young player how to hit. It's just very calm, balanced, quiet. The swing is short. The path through the zone is great. He tracks pitches really well. He's got great hand-eye coordination. He doesn't sell out for power. So it's more of a hit first approach, use the whole field. When he does turn on one, when he does let it loose, like there is bat speed in there for him to turn on balls for power. So you have that kind of profile from a guy who I think can stay at shortstop. That's why he's the number one player in the class for the high school guys.
Easy plus hitter. Feel like it's easy to put that plus projection on him. I mean, he's one of those hitters where every time you watch him, he just looks in control, confident, and his takes are easy and strong.
Slows things down.
The balance is great, like his ability to time up different pitch types, to handle velocity. It does just look like the game slows down for him in the batter's box. I mean, how does he stack up with some of the best high school pure hitters in recent memory? Like the Tamar Johnson experience is... And I think in general, I've gotten a little bit more conservative with tool grades for draftees just from doing it over the years and learning to contextualize these players versus prospects at large instead of just their peers. So we haven't had a hit tool grade in the Tamar Johnson territory since then, and he hasn't quite lived up to that pure hitting ability. But there have been a lot of really impressive pure hitters. I mean, Kevin McGonigal is maybe the best one of recent vintage to actually live up to that and maybe exceed the pure hitting hype that he had at the time.
Max Clark and Walker Jenkins too. I'd throw them in there, certainly to the success bucket of what they have done. Yeah, I'd put him, you know, he doesn't have like the speed or arm strength that Max Clark had or like the pure physicality of Walker Jenkins.
But he's got probably the shortstop profile.
Yeah, I mean, he can play shortstop compared to McGonigal. I'd probably put McGonigal ahead just as a hitter because, I mean, he's just a special high school hitter.
It's like he had a magnet on his barrel that attracted the baseball. He would only barrel anything. So
yeah, but I think Grady's a better shortstop, better athlete. I think like you compare him this year or to this year's draft, guys like Eli Willits or Kaysen Cunningham would probably be two of the better pure hitters. Grady Emerson, I would definitely take ahead of them. And I mean, definitely had anybody in the 24 draft just on pure hitting ability. Obviously, like Connor Griffin is a super, super, super talented player in terms of what he's, everything he does. But like at the time, then the reason he was not the number one overall pick, which he would probably be now in retrospect, although maybe Nick Kurtz gives him a run for his money there, but was because of the questions on, you know, how much he was going to hit, because I don't think anybody had questions about the tools with Connor Griffin.
Yeah. And then on the college side, I'd mentioned Derek Curiel. I think he also has traits to be a plus hitter. I mean, he has been a really advanced hitter really throughout the entirety of his high school career at Orange Lutheran since his freshman year. He was just a standout hitter. I think more than contact skills, though, for Curiel, his approach and his selectivity at the plate is what stands out to me. I mean, I think he does have a lot of contact skills. His in-zone contact was tremendous. His first year at LSU, he hit 345, 470, 519, nearly as many walks as strikeouts. I think that like his understanding of the zone is always going to allow him to get on base at a high clip, regardless of what he's doing in terms of like batted ball quality. But he's another player who has always just stuck out for how advanced he is in the box and his ability to see the ball. I would like to see him maybe get a little bit more aggressive in his swing decisions, because I think he probably lets more pitches go by than he needs to. But it's hard to argue with the performance that he had. And I think he would pretty easily stack up with some of the more advanced hitters in the class on the college side.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Yeah, there's probably some similarities just in terms of the swing and contact ability to Curiel and Emerson back when Curiel was in high school. I think the difference, obviously, Emerson, you know, shortstop versus Curiel center field. And then I think Emerson,
Curiel had some injuries.
Yeah, Curiel had some injuries in high school. And then also, yeah, the strength. I think that's going to be the key to watch. I think this year with Curiel, he's a really high baseball IQ guy, very instinctive player, and makes a ton of contact. Like you said, just how it sounds like he's getting stronger. Curious to see how that'll play out next.
Yeah, he's just always such a lean framed player that I wonder like what is the kind of upper limits of the physicality he can add or the impact he can add. But I think people were probably more impressed with the exit velocity data that he had in his first year in college. It is metal bat. I guess we'll see what happens with a wood bat for him long term. But just in terms of like pure hitting ability, Eric Becker is another one I would mention. Eric Becker, shortstop at Virginia. I mean, he's been just putting on a hitting clinic in his 2 years in college. This is also a guy who just doesn't miss a lot. It's a pretty direct swing. He's to the ball. He can hit the ball all over the field, hit over power. So he'd be another one to mention here. I'm not sure if you have any other guys on either the college or high school level you want to mention, but these feel like kind of the headliners.
On the high school side, a couple guys who jump out. One is Aiden Ruiz, who everybody obviously talks about for his defense at shortstop, a high school player in New York, because he's just so silky smooth and instinctive defensively at shortstop. I think he's the best defensive shortstop in the country, but he just has phenomenal hand-eye coordination. So he's one of the hardest players to get to swing and miss in the class. And he's smaller. There's not much power there in terms of like game power, especially right now. It's a very contact oriented approach. There is some sneaky bat speed in there. Like he does have bat speed. He's just very much geared to try to put the ball in play. And he does a phenomenal job of that. I'm not sure like how much he should change anything that he does at the plate, but I think that's just going to be the question offensively with him is, hey, this guy makes a ton of contact. You can't get him to swing and miss, but how much, you know, how much power is there going to be with him? And then the other guy would be Cole Prosek, who's a left-handed hitting shortstop, infielder, you know, TBD where he ends up playing, because he's definitely an offensive oriented infielder in Mississippi. And man, it's just all really pure hitter, pure swing, compact, good path through the zone. Like, it just seems like his barrel is bigger than everybody else's. He's always on time, always barreling balls in the air to all fields. More hit over power, strong body. Again, figure out where he's going to play, hopefully somewhere in the infield, but just a really advanced knack for hitting.
Nice. And then we got a second question from Nate Handy. He also asked, what do you think played into Carson Tinney's poor production on the Cape? So for those who maybe don't know, Carson Tinney is one of the top catchers in the class. He played his first 2 years at Notre Dame. We had him ranked in the early 50s on our pre-summer top 100 list, and he actually moved up in the rankings despite a really poor summer on the Cape. As Nate alluded to, he hit 165, 267, 367 in 28 games with Brewster in the Cape, 36 strikeouts to just 9 walks after his breakout season with Notre Dame. I kind of dug into this a little bit, and it was fun to do because basically everyone we talked to when we were reporting on the update for this list, all the scouts loved Tinney enough to say we needed to rank him higher just because they felt we were a little bit low on his talent, even despite the performance in the spring. And he was absolutely rifling baseballs with Texas this fall. He's transferring from Notre Dame to Texas, which will give him a nice platform next spring if he can continue to perform. But Carson Tinney is this big, physical, 6'3", 6'4", 230 pounds catcher and right-handed hitter who has a ton of power. But I think in general, there are some swing and miss issues that he has. There are some aggression issues that he has he's going to need to figure out. For me, I don't think it's elite bat speed. And he has this hand hitch and barrel tip that I think can get exposed at times. And so just looking at his spring numbers compared to the summer, he kind of regressed across the board in terms of swing decisions, in terms of miss rate, chase rate. And he also was throwing pitches out of the zone more frequently in the Cape. And I just think he didn't really make an adjustment to that. In the spring as well, he was fine against fastballs. Like, the contact questions and chase questions were much more serious against breaking balls and changeups, but his fastball swing and miss rate almost doubled. So that's the primary pitch type he was facing. He made a lot less contact against fastballs. Pitchers were throwing him out of the zone a little bit more frequently than they did in the spring. And he just didn't make the adjustments to that. So I think there are going to be some real hit tool questions he's going to have to answer for himself next spring. But even if he's looking like a below average pure hitter, just the power tools that he is able to provide as someone who looks like he's going to be able to stick behind the plate is going to make him one of the more appealing catchers in the class. So that's kind of some of the reasons for the summer struggles, and also why he moved up our board despite those struggles. Scouts really just love the upside potential and the tools that he offers as this physical college catcher who has, again, his metal bat performance is pretty exceptional. And I think people are assuming that's going to continue next year. It wouldn't shock me at all if he had 20 plus homers. All right, we got another question from Falcons8572 on Instagram, who asks, do you think the Braves could grab Carson Bolamon and Gio Rojas in next year's draft? So the Braves, I guess, could have the opportunity to draft both those players. They'll be picking inside the top 10 at 9th overall. They also have a PPI pick in the 20s for Jake Baldwin's Rookie of the Year award. We currently have both Gio Rojas and Carson Bolamon as the top two high school pitchers in the class in the late teens. And the Braves have also been one of the more aggressive teams targeting high school pitching. I would not bet on them taking two high school pitchers, though. I feel like just given the state of their farm system, given the supply of talent that they're going to have at their disposal this year, picking as high as they're going to with their first overall pick, I feel like a hitter makes much more sense for their first overall pick. But if either of those pitchers are the pick at their second, I don't think that would surprise me. What are your thoughts on kind of this Braves draft strategy question?
Yeah, it's they have been so pitcher heavy, obviously up until this year where they took Tate Southesine with their first overall or their first round pick this year. So maybe they do go pitching again and just say, hey, well, this is what we like and this is what we want to build around. I don't want to draft for need, but their system is very much imbalanced in terms of how much pitching they have versus the lack of hitters in their farm system. And they still look like, obviously, like they've produced Michael Harris and they produced Drake Baldwin and like they still have found hitters. But right now, you look at the state of the system, there's not a lot of hitters in there that you're feeling great about. And you're not usually drafting this high if you're the Braves. Right. You don't usually have the ability to draft a hitter who's available with one of the first nine picks in the draft. And I think it's a strong year, especially for high school hitters. There's good college hitters available. So especially when you have that, you know, the number of picks you have that early. Yeah. I could see them taking a pitcher, you know, with their second pick or later on. And maybe they still do end up going, you know, maybe Carson Bolamon or Gio Rojas or some other high school pitcher, and there's some other good ones this year, ends up, you know, looking like what people thought Jackson Jobe was or something like that. And is the top guy on their board, and they're like, hey, this is the guy we want. So it wouldn't shock me. But man, if I were them, I'd certainly be putting a lot of resources and time into evaluating pitchers and evaluating hitters and targeting hitters with that top pick, because, you know, Gio Rojas, Carson Bolamon, I love both those guys. We always see high school pitchers slide in the draft. Teams just get skittish as it gets closer and as more hitters or college pitchers are available with a little bit more certainty, less or a shorter runway to get to the big leagues, fewer things that can go wrong before they get to the big leagues. So it's possible they end up getting one of those guys later in the draft on an overslot type deal. Kind of, you know, Briggs McKenzie, obviously, being an example this year.
Yeah, perfect example. Briggs McKenzie was the fourth player they took. He got the biggest bonus in their draft class. I think it just does make more sense. Like, there's nothing that's going to prevent Gio Rojas or Carson Bolamon shooting up into the top 10 range and being like worthwhile picks. That wouldn't shock me at all. But I also think there are some other college pitching options that maybe have a greater chance of being in play for the Braves at that pick. Again, just because of what you mentioned with taking high school players a little bit later. It is interesting, though. Maybe it's interesting. Maybe it's just pure speculation on my part. But I had, in our first mock draft, I had the Braves with Jacob Lombard at 9 overall and then Gio Rojas at 22nd. Or 26 overall, excuse me. And just kind of looking through some of the players who are available. I mean, the last time the Braves picked inside the top 10, it was 2019. They took Shea Langeliers, 9th overall. But you just have to go back 1 year prior to that. They picked 8th overall in 2018, took Carter Stewart, a high school right-handed pitcher. In 2017, they took Cal Wright, right-handed pitcher out of Vanderbilt. And in 2016, they took Ian Anderson, 3rd overall. So the Braves as an organization do have a track record of taking arms in this range. Different people running the team, different people running the scouting department back then. And again, to kind of our initial point, it does just feel like both the supply of the best players available make me think hitter is more likely at 9 in particular, and the state of the Braves farm system and their organizational needs make me think 9 is more likely to be a hitter. So I would say I don't think they'll grab both of them, but one of them, I would imagine they have as decent of odds as anyone. And they should have a decent amount of pool money as well with that extra pick to maybe float towards a high school arm they want to take a shot on. So fun question, though. Any other thoughts on that, Ben?
No, I think, I'd bet on the hitter first, but given how much they like high school pitching, any pick after that is a good bet, whether it's one of those guys or you know, Logan Schmidt, Jensen Hirschkorn, somebody else who's They're going to have access to some good high school arms. There's a lot of good depth of high school mm-hmm. pitching in this class that I like a lot.
Yeah. Okay, that's going to wrap it up. It feels odd to do a future projection podcast where we're kind of nearing the 30-minute mark and closing out, but did want to do some questions. Got a fun little draft-themed mailbag for you guys, and maybe just use this pod as a way to encourage you all to send us questions if you have them. If you've got any prospect questions you want us to tackle, shoot them our way. You can email us, futureprojection@baseballamerica.com. Both of our socials are linked in the podcast description below. Ben, any final comments before we sign off here?
No, hopefully we'll try to do one next week too if we can.
Cool. All right, for Ben, I'm Carlos. We will see you guys next time. So long, everybody.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.